Do you want to maximize your success with NCUA? Join Mark Treichel as he shares with you the insider's view on passing your exam with flying colors. The With Flying Colors podcast is sponsored by Credit Union Exam Solutions by Mark Treichel. If you would like to work directly with the Credit Union Exam Solutions team and receive support to optimize your results with NCUA so you save time and money, visit us at marktreichel.com to find out more.
Hey, everyone. This is Mark Treichel with another episode of With Flying Colors. I'm excited to have Mike Macchiarola from Olden Lane here today. Mike, how you doing?
Doing well, Mark. Good to be with you.
Yeah, glad. Last year, we had our first annual podcast on NCUA's annual report. There's a lot of annuals in there, but this is number two. You and I saw on LinkedIn that you had done an article on this, and I thought, hey, that'd be great to do our follow-up on NCUA's annual report. But before we get into that, why don't you describe what it is you and Olden Lane do for credit unions?
Perfect. And thanks for having me on, Mark. Olden Lane is very technically a registered investment advisor and a broker-dealer. We're also a credit union service organization. It's made up of a group now, 10 or 11 deep financial professionals. We got together about 5 years ago or so, a little longer than that now. And we realized that the credit union industry was being underserved in certain pockets, most notably in some of the delivery of capital markets expertise. So we set out to do a number of things through our broker-dealer and our been most notable, I would guess, in our contribution to the subordinated debt market. Of the transactions that have happened, Olden Lane has had a pronounced role. We've been involved in that business all the way back to its early days as secondary capital. When we got in that business, it was about a $200 million market. Now it's touching $4 billion. Olden Lane has played a significant role in helping lots of credit unions across the country, large and small, use sub-debt for growth, for acquisition-related growth, and to repair a hiccup on the balance sheet if that happens from time to time. We continue to be in that business. More recently, we've been playing a lot in the M&A business. We can do anything in that area from identify targets, screen for targets in particular geographies or across asset classes. And then we can advise, we can work on the negotiation between parties. We can do M&A between banks and credit unions, between credit unions and credit unions. We can do the valuation suite. We can do the negotiations, and we can help in any way on that whole suite of services. That's important, and that's somewhat new to us, but we think, as we'll get into, I'm sure, in a little bit, that's going to be ripe for a lot of activity in the coming months and years.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's definitely going to be a lot of that going on here based on what I'm seeing and what's happening in the economy, et cetera. With that, let's pivot NCUA's 2023 annual report. I know you have several thoughts on some of the themes that you saw there, but I'm just gonna kick it over to you, Mike, and let's say, so what, in summary, what do you have to say about it, and or what was your first takeaway?
Okay. First of all, I always look at it as a picture. I'm not a good one, but a struggling artist. So from its artistry and its presentation and the way it's laid out, we give it an A or an A+. And that's not surprising. That has been the theme consistently from the agency. They've won a few awards in recent years for the way it lays it out. That's good because honestly, it should be accessible for the industry and the professionals that are in the industry. It should be a document that the NCUA is proud of because at the end of the day, it's really a summary of what we've done. But we're most interested in it here because we can glean from it and read between the lines and see what lens the agency seems to be looking at things through. And that's where, of course, it's most interesting to us because we try to pivot in the proper directions and respond to where we think the agency is going and to help advise our clients as to what we see as potential things coming down the line. Go ahead. I would say in that regard, I think first and foremost, the biggest observation I would have is that the agency is very concerned about the macroeconomic environment. That is the biggest thing that I would take away from the presentation.
Yeah, and that's consistent. It seems to be a general theme when NCUA talks about the state of the insurance fund, which happens quarterly. And I talk about that a little bit here. It's another document that I like to refer to when they do their PowerPoint on the condition of the insurance fund. They also include really the only public snapshot of where camel codes are. And it's when they do that, I think at the last one they did, they said that camel code $3 insured shares had tripled in 2023. And then each of the board member talks about, and particularly Chairman Harper will speak to the fact that he's worried about, is it going to be a soft landing? Is it not going to be a soft landing? Is it going to be a recession? You're hearing about commercial loans ballooning and empty office space and people working from home. And how's that going to impact real estate? How's that going to impact credit unions? And they're definitely sending signals in many different ways. And they also talk about it quite a bit here in this annual report.
Yep. We watched that Camel's Code report, the NCUSIF financial statistics report, pretty religiously now. I think I stole that habit from you. So thank you for that. I would point out last quarter, as you said, we've now got 19.5% of credit unions by count are now in a 3, 4, or 5 camel code. That's significant. As you said, the trend is higher. Almost 8% of the industry's assets now reside in a 3, 4, or 5 coded institution. And those with more than $500 million in assets, we've seen 8 institutions and more than $20 billion in assets move into that Camel 3 over the last quarter alone. So those are things that we watch, and you're exactly right. The other thing I would say is that the trends are not your friend. We point out that there are trends in everything from cost of funds to delinquencies and charge-offs to ROA to OPEX that are trending against getting better. So if you look at cost of funds, for example, this is pronounced, and this has been the stress. We can call it whatever we want, interest rate risk, cost of funds stress. Here we see an industry that averaged 1.58% cost of funds in the latest quarter. That's not by itself so troubling. What's more troubling is that is a full 1 percentage point higher than Q4 a year ago. So 2/3 of your cost of funds is new in the latest year at the average credit. That is extraordinary. And it's not surprising because we saw this interest rate hike and we saw it move with a certain rapidity and a certain violence that we've never seen before. On top of that, it comes from, you know, all known was the most benign interest rate environment we had probably in history. Delinquencies is another thing we watch closely. Delinquencies at 83 basis points in Q4. That's double the bottom tick in the beginning of 2022. Net charge-offs, 77 basis points in Q4, up steadily from when it low-ticked in 2021 when money was abundant. What I saw this morning on the delinquency front, on the charge-off front, actually, Discover Credit Card just reported, right? 5.7% charge-off rate. You have to go all the way back to 2011 in the height of the great financial crisis to find that same level. As concerning, 256 basis points of that charge-off level is new from a year ago. Those are not good trends. Industry-wide ROA, 69 basis points. The industry was regularly hitting better than 1% through all of 2021. And has now been steadily declining since the end of 20. OPEX is 2.95% and has been climbing steadily since the beginning of 2022. Employment-related expenses are now 51% of what's going on at credit union, and those very often are the hardest to unencumber yourself. So it's difficult now. It is likely to persist. We do not think these stresses are going to abate. And then I would say overall, the largest concern is that we do not have a good picture of the macroeconomic environment. The yield curve remains inverted. We are now past 650 days of an inverted yield curve. That is the longest inverted yield curve in the history of the United States. And we are in a business which takes deposits at the short end and lends them long in an inverted yield curve environment that is foundationally impossible. So we've got tough sailing here. We've got choppy waters. Now we have to figure out how to navigate it. And it is appropriate for the agency to point this out in the annual report the way they did, respectfully, but they're signaling that it's tough.
As you're saying all those, and it always goes back to Campbell, I think it's probably 6 or 8 quarters straight that the Campbell data has gotten worse. But if you go back to 08, 09, 2010, 2011, it was the bad numbers back then, Campbell-wise, we haven't come close to hitting, right? So when you go through and rattle off all those trends, I think the only positive trend statistically might be yield, because loans are pricing higher and investments are pricing higher. Operating expenses going up because of inflation, cost of funds going up, charge-offs going up, delinquency going up. It ties into that M&A activity, which could increase. And one of the things I'm seeing is the pressure. Those credit unions who might have already got sub-debt or had above average capital, let's say they're 12% capital and they have another 2% of sub-debt, so they're 14%. Those are the credit unions that are going to be out being able to take on merger candidates. You have others who thought they were fine with maybe 8.5% and well capitalized, didn't take the opportunity of ESIP, or maybe didn't seize sub-debt when rates were low. And now they're starting to get at the ankles by all this other statistics. So it's going to be an interesting 2024 for sure. And that's what NCUA is really pointing out here. So great points. Anything that I said there that you want to comment on, or you're ready to go to number two?
I can go to number two, but I would say something on sub-debt. It is incredible that we're looking at today some of the largest sub-debt offerings that went off only a couple of years ago. Went off in the 3s, 4s, or 5s. And honestly, that's the cost of funding today. So you've got folks that have big pieces of sub-debt, to your point, that are inside where they would do the marginal funding trade today, which is just an amazing. And it goes to, number one, those people were smart to do that. And in hindsight, we'd all be a lot smarter. And we all should have realized there was a sort of asymmetric risk to raising capital when interest rates were as low as they were historically. But I do think you're right. Those that are capital rich are going to be in a good position to be picking here. I will say, though, I wouldn't hurry into risk. I had a credit union the other day, very smart CEO. She's great. And she said, I am not in an asset arms race. And she said, it is not risky to stand pat here as others on a relative basis don't perform as well. Very interesting. Thought that was pretty insightful.
Yeah, very much. Looking at the article that you did, I think you had the next bullet you had in your article was a creeping emphasis on consumer protection. I like the word creeping that you, in a lot of ways that you use there, but what are your thoughts relative to that?
Look, I think this is somewhat driven by the NCUA and the internal changes that have happened there on the board composition. I think it's also in line with what we're seeing across a larger swath of sort of regulation and industry. People don't like overdraft. They don't like fees on non-sufficient funds. We can argue about what they are or what they mean. Yes, some have abused them, but in many instances, they are part of a responsible business model. I would argue that as a general matter in the credit union space, credit unions in particular are not abusers of fees. Our whole industry is built on going the other way there. But we're all going to be susceptible to a regime for the foreseeable future that is hyper-focused on wringing a lot of this out for the benefit of consumer protection. What this means is certain credit unions that have this as a substantial piece of their business are going to have to pivot. And the problem is that it is a very difficult environment in which to replace revenue. We just went through all of the trends, which are against you. And now you're being told to substantially, in many cases, pivot from a business that has been tried and true over a number of years. One of the more interesting things is the CFPB's most recent proposed rule. I can't fully get my arms around it, because what it does is it proposes to prohibit banks and credit unions, among others, from charging fee where there's an instantaneous or near instantaneous decline based on your balance in your account. That very rarely happens. Yes, your debit account can come up short as you swipe it at a cash register, but there's generally not a fee there. The fees in large measure are ACH related fees, and they come later. They're nowhere near instantaneous. They're part of a clearing fee, and they wouldn't be captured by this proposed rule. So it's curious where the CFPB is going with that proposal, but it does highlight, at least for me, the intensity under which all of these fees are going to remain for some time. So we're seeing a lot of credit unions, to their credit, abandon them. But again, it puts substantial strain on what they're doing from just an economic standpoint.
Yeah, and I commented this on one of my more recent episodes, but Chairman Harper talked about how two of the three largest banks have said no NSFs, no overdraft fees. We're not going to do them. And then trickle-down effect on they're going to do it. Everybody else has to say that they're going to go away from it. But the reality is those three biggest institutions, they're going to be here 300 years from now, right? So they're like the Amazons. They have the ability to get rid of those fees and ride out the storm. Then you've got other institutions that are hearing NCUA say that fee income is a new type of concentration risk, which I think it's a new type of concentration risk because of what they're doing. NCUA is making it a concentration risk by deeming it such. So what are they going to do? Okay, I'll get rid of my fees. And then, as you said, at the same time as your delinquency is going up, your charge-offs are going down, and then you're, I don't know, pick a number, $100 million, $200 million, and the CEO wants to retire, and you're looking for someone who's going to balance all these things, but it's getting harder and harder every day to do so. I think it's here to stay for a while, the focus on fees, just particularly because, as you said, the makeup of the board, but it's going to drive up mergers and make profitability and everything else more challenging going forward. And as you said, just at the wrong time, when there's other issues that NCUA has to deal with and credit unions have to deal with it. And I get it from an NCUA perspective. There's finally two Democratic board members, and it's a Democratic-led initiative all the way from the White House. Therefore, they have to seize the opportunity, but it's really not well-timed for credit unions.
Yep. A couple other things I would add. Number one is I just hate the word junk fees. I think it's a misnomer. I think it's inappropriate. I think it's overly hostile to what this is. Number two is when you compare the largest banking institutions to your typical credit union, what everyone leaves out of that story is the subsidy for too big to fail. Those guys can raise capital, raise deposits much cheaper than the smaller institutions. And no one has done anything to address the fact that subsidy from the federal government exists. And I'm one of these guys that's old enough to remember the whole point of what we were doing after the great financial crisis was to take that risk, move it out of a concentrated group of institutions. That's an epic failure. Someone needs to write that story and tell it out loud. And what's happening is unless and until we get honest about the fact that the smaller credit unions are the ecosystem by which we move capital into the smaller communities throughout this country, and that ecosystem has been built up over 100 years or 90 plus years of a Federal Credit Union Act in our case, we have to start valuing that, because the small bar owner or the small restaurant owner in the middle of rural America or urban center is not necessarily covered by the largest banking institutions, and nor do they want to cover him. So he or her need to rely on this credit union network, the community bank network, to find that capital, to find those loans, to find that really that banking institution that cares down at his or her level. And we've got to value that. We have to understand that's absolutely important to them as a mechanism throughout this country.
Very well said. And I think it's being forgotten right now. Excellent point. So another theme I see you picked up on in the current 2023 annual report is, once again, NCUA speaks to third-party service providers. Any color you can provide to what you picked up there?
Yep. Some of this I get from the report, and some of this I get from some recent conversations. I've done some in-the-field work here, Mark.
Very good.
You're not my only NCUA insider.
Perfect.
So insiders assure me that this is unlikely to happen. And there is enough resistance from what I've heard from a lot of different corners that this should not or will not happen. This is something that they've harped on for a while, that they'd love to get their tentacles. The agency would love to get their tentacles into some of the QSOs and get more than a sort of perfunctory filing. They want to have some oversight over those QSOs. Here it's interesting, right? So many QSOs already have a regulator. So take Olden Lane, for example. We're among the most regulated institutions you could ever have, right? I've got the SEC, I've got the NFA and the CFTC, and I've got FINRA. All review me regularly. I'm subject to exams. And those folks know our business quite well, right? The folks at FINRA, the folks at the SEC, when they do an exam, they know exactly what to look for and understand our business. So I don't know in our case, for example, what the NCUA would lend other than inconvenience for us and cost for them. I suspect this is a little bit budget creep. I think it's a little bit, in fairness, I get where the agency's coming from because there are certain things that have happened, been caused by or driven by what's happened at a QSO. There have been some high profile events tied to information or data loss that are QSO related. So I think there might be a middle ground here. I think if we start talking about sharing information or personal identifiable information of customers or members, I think that may be subject to higher scrutiny. That may get a little bit of a different regime where the NCUA can get some additional oversight. But I think in the normal course, other than budget creep, and frankly, I think when the NCUA looks a little harder, they're going to realize some of these industries they don't want to be in. They don't have the expertise, and there's already an existing regulator. So I think some of this is real, but some of it is overplayed, and I think we're unlikely, other than really in data, to see much here.
It's two things jump into my mind when I maybe two or three things. It's the dog chasing the ice cream truck. You caught the truck. Now, what are you going to do with it? And I worry about that. I really worry about that because everybody's having a challenge being fully staffed, but you take on a new arena where you don't have expertise. How's that going to go? And how are you going to do it? Are you going to rob from Peter to pay Paul? And then when I was at NCUA, one of the thoughts that I had when Congress would say, hey, what authorities don't you have that you should have, right? You have to tell them that FDIC has third-party service provider authority. You have to point it out, and you have to say, yeah, in a perfect world, we should have that. Because if something blows up and you didn't ask for it, they're going to say, why didn't you tell us you needed this authority? So they will ask for it forever. When I was there, I asked for it, and I hoped I didn't get it because there was no way I could do it without either pretending I was doing it or jacking the budget up so much that it created a burden for credit unions. Yeah, it'll be there. It'll be in the annual report. It'll be in every request for Congress. And then every once in a while, when one really bad cyber thing happens, I start to think, you know what, maybe NCUA should have this authority. And then I kind of drift back to the dog and the ice cream truck.
It's funny. They've got it indirectly now in the cyber world, or what they've done in the union through the latest cyber release. Right? You've got to do your own vendor diligence, which you'd have to do anyway.
Right.
But I think, honestly, I think that's, your insights are perfect. What happens if I catch this ice cream truck? Because then I don't know what to do. I think that's perfect.
So we'll see where next year we'll talk about their need to have third-party due diligence.
Yeah, we'll put it on next year's list.
And a big part of, we've talked a little bit about sub-debt. You guys do a lot in the sub-debt arena, and the ability to do that comes from low-income designated credit unions. Any thoughts or takeaways relative to that and the report, the annual report and or just in general?
I think the LIQU piece of the annual report will be there every year. I think we can talk about it almost the same way every year. LIQU, as you mentioned, brings you several pieces of regulatory relief. It gives you a lift on your member business loan cap. It gives you the ability to take non-member deposits from any source instead of just from other credit union municipalities. It allows you, in the case of subordinated debt, to raise that subordinated debt, but to count it towards your PCA worth. And then it allows you access from time to community development a revolving loan fund grants, and I believe there's a window open right now for some of that money. Those regulatory relief, those four forms of regulatory relief can be important. I think the best, most important in most cases is really either the member business loan lift or the sub-debt that you get in PCA net worth. But we're going to see people increasingly try to get to Q status. Those numbers have been creeping up steadily over years. It's basically 50-50 in terms of assets at this point. Non-Q and Q is about $1 trillion of each. And there are a few more Qs that non-Q is about 54% of the industry is now low income credit units. Again, to get that status, you've got to basically meet certain thresholds in terms of who membership is. We can help with that. There are several others that do that as well. But I think it's something that people will continue to seek, either through strategic merger or optimizing their membership. The other thing I would say in that regard is anecdotally, we're definitely seeing evidence that the NCUA is enforcing this. So long-respected LIQs will continue to be examined on this number. And if they fall below it, they will be sent a letter from the NCUA to that effect. The way the reg works, I think it's 70134. Under that regulation, you can, if you lose your status, if the NCUA says you're no longer a LIQ, as if you are a LIQ 5 years, you have a period of up to 5 years to cure that status and get that letter back from the NCUA that you have. So not much to say other than it's going to be here and it's going to be something that people increasingly seek.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. So I was chatting with the credit union recently who just got one of those letters and has their five-year clock that has just begun. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere along the way, NCUA had a proposal that would allow once a Q, always a like you, with the concept being if you're so successful in your community that the low income percentage is resolved, for lack of another, you have so much success that there's so many people who move from low income to middle income. Is it, do you really want to penalize them for being an institution that has whose collective membership has improved? Now that would take an act of Congress, which would be like getting an act of Congress. So will it happen? Will it happen? I don't know, but it's a great theory.
There's two people that have told that to me. I used to refer to that as Mike Kochman theory, and Mike sits next to me here in the office because he's always been a staunch defender of that position. And then I believe that position is the same position that I heard repeated to me by former board member Rodney Hood.
I think you're right.
If that's right, Mike's in pretty good company because I hold Rodney in some pretty high rare air.
You got it. And since you mentioned former NCUA chairman Rodney Hood, he was a recent guest on the podcast. And to the listeners, if you missed that episode, I recommend you go back and give it a listen. And Mike, if you haven't listened to that one, go back and give it a listen. Rodney was chock full of wisdom in that one, as usual. So we've talked at different stages of this conversation. We've talked about consolidation. Anything else we need to hammer home on consolidations and mergers?
Couple of things here. I now begin most of my conversations with folks on this topic with something to the effect of, welcome to the opening ceremonies of the M&A Olympics, because I really think that's where we are. I think if this was a baseball game, we'd still be in batting practice. And we've seen some movement here. What's very interesting, if you look at the numbers, and it's going to be the same both on the bank acquisition side and on the credit union for credit side. You have a trend line that begins in 2019 and is trending upward in terms of deal volume by dollar and by number. That turns sharply lower in 2023. It almost evaporates. And then it starts to pick up again. We've had some pretty good activity in both of those fronts in 2024. And folks say, why did this happen? Is this a trend or what happened? If you remember 2023, nothing external is going to happen in 2023 because we're all reeling from the interest rate shock that we had internally. And we're all fundamentally changing our business in response there too. So the last thing we're going to do is entertain some inorganic growth. Now, fast forward to today, we're at a place where the cost of member acquisition is as high as any of us can remember. the cost of member retention in terms of paying up on deposits is as high as anyone can remember. So with that as our backdrop, it is going to be hard to grow organically in many places in the country. Now, we've also got massive demographic shifts that are going on. So it's making it easier for some and much harder for others simply because your neighborhood is evaporating. You've also got competition on the deposit gathering side that you didn't even know was here when you were stacked up with money in 2021 because stimulus came directly on your balance sheet. You didn't even realize that the Chimes and the SoFis of the world and the Marcus from Goldman Sachs of the world were going to come in and be able to sweep up deposits very quickly simply by being competitive on price. And because COVID sped up the move to mobile, price becomes even more important as we move forward. So the geographic moat that you think you had, the moat that you had from your seg group, those are all evaporating very rapidly. And so we're in an environment where we're going to look for growth in places that are inorganic. And so we've seen already in 2024, we've seen 7 announced credit union purchases of banks that are of significant size. And we've seen, I think it 6 credit union for credit union mergers that are substantial in terms of size, and I would call strategic instead of to assist somebody who's in trouble. So we're seeing peer-for-peer credit union merger of size, and we're seeing significant bank purchase by credit unions. That is likely to persist given the economic environment we have. And in that environment, capital becomes king, as you said earlier.
When you think about COVID, the pandemic, and the shift, the mobile ability to get your deposits, mobile ability to get food delivered to your front door instead of having to go to your restaurant, mobile ability to work from home and not have to go into the office. And all of these things have consequences or unintended consequences. It's as if the pandemic shrunk 20 years of progress down into a 1-year period where everybody was fighting to survive and the business models of so many things changed. And it's impacting mergers, it's impacting deposits, it's impacting commercial loans, it's impacting the fact that that there are restaurants that now exist just to deliver, and many other things that I haven't even touched on, I'm sure.
I wish I was a sociologist because you would have unbelievable amounts of things to study in terms of the hollowing out of the city, right? You've got the Amazonification of the retail streetscape, which is already having dramatic impacts. Then you've got the hollowing out of the city in terms of the work from home. Then you've got a declining tax base in terms of tolls and pricing. So now you are in a potential difficult loop for the municipality itself. You're also in a difficult loop that we're seeing expressed in the CRE market, right? In terms of a redefining of what office is. We've seen a very significant default in the last 2 weeks in Brooklyn, which is an interesting market. The largest building in Brooklyn had a default. You've seen a hollowing out in major cities, San Francisco, of course. You've seen some difficult defaults in Baltimore. You've seen them in Chicago. And that's one of the things where we're not yet through the credit cycle because we're seeing those difficulties happen. Luckily here, not every credit union has commercial real estate exposure. Only the larger guys do. And the larger folks are struggling. We've seen some pretty pronounced write-downs and charge-offs in the last quarter, some which were even readjusted more recently here. And a lot of them are related to asset classes that are riskier or really honestly where only the biggest credit unions can play. That has effects too, because and some of that is alluded to in the annual report. The interplay of big and small credit union is something that the NCUA seems to be watching, because as this consolidation happens, the increased bigness brings with it its own attendant risks. And the NCUA is keenly focused on that. They have a quote, actually. It says, large credit unions tend to offer more complex products, services, and investments. And increasingly, complex institutions will pose management challenge for those institutions themselves and for the NCUA. Very insightful by the agency to understand where we are in that continuum and to be looking out for what may come with it. Again, a good grade to the agency there in terms of understanding that cycle. But again, I don't think we're anywhere near through the credit cycle here. It's going to get more difficult.
It's going to get worse before it gets better. But all those things are going to be solved by artificial intelligence. So we can maybe get to that a little bit later. Make sure the conversation. I'm saying that tongue in cheek, but maybe that's one of the things maybe NCUA is alluding to, right? These bigger institutions are going to find themselves having to do things in the AI world. And what does that mean for all the other complicating factors we just mentioned? But I digress. We can't talk about NCUA and we can't talk about banks and we can't talk about mobility without talking about cybersecurity. Certainly they discussed this in the report. Any thoughts on what NCUA said in their annual report on cybersecurity?
When you live as exciting a life as I do, Mark, you do things like you take the NCUA annual report and you search the word cyber. And then you bet with the folks in the office to see who can get closest to how many times it appears across the 236 pages. The winner this year was 92. Tyler in our office got it right on the screws. He suggested that it was going to be 92 times, and he was right. So 92 times they use the word, or if it's a partial word, cyber. And where do they use it and what do they mean? They're proud of their updated and scalable cyber exam procedures. And so good for them. They've got a standardized set of steps that they go through to understand data collection and how it's analyzed. And so good that they're paying attention there. Good grade. The other thing that they're running a victory lap for, and again, rightly, is that they released their cyber incident reporting. And what's interesting here is that they run a victory lap for the fact that the cyber reporting went up dramatically after it was passed. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, because here in this instance, they've caught the ice cream truck and it's full of ice cream. So yeah. It begs the question, why weren't they chasing it a year ago or 2 years ago or three?
Sure.
But then they also have their most recent letter to credit unions, which is ruling out the cyber incident report. And they require credit unions here to do a couple of things, all of which seem to make very good sense. You've got to update your response plans. You've got to review your third-party contracts, which we alluded to earlier. You've got to keep your employees trained up to date on cyber and all things attendant to it. And you've got to monitor and document any incidents very quickly to the NCUA, which is what a lot of folks have paid extra attention to. The other thing I will say here is this is a perfect place where scale matters. One of the places where we see scale expressing itself is the incidents of cyber attack are up. Every CEO that I talk to tells me about how difficult it is to avoid fraud, to avoid cyber attack, and how often they have to refresh their tech stack. That's a spend. That's a significant amount of money. It's a significant amount of time and energy in an environment. It is increasingly difficult for smaller credit unions to keep up there. And that is one of the key drivers behind a lot of the consolidation that we're seeing, is that the smaller credit unions just cannot continue to withstand that, the frequency of those attacks and the sophistication of that fraud. And so they are very often looking for a more sophisticated, bigger, stronger partner to help them. And we see that in shared services. We also see it, honestly, in consolidation.
And it's going to be some institution that makes a judgment call that leaves a door. With the best people, it's hard to keep the wolves at bay. But if you are having to make dollar decisions and maybe doing everything that you need, that's going to lead to some situations where credit unions could be subject to ransomware or out and out fraud, and it's those examples that will continue to have NCUA beating the drum for needing third-party authority like we talked about earlier. The other thing that popped into my head is I love word search in NCUA documents. It's something that I picked up from Steve Farr, formerly of NCUA, also of my team. And one thing I like to do is I like to see how many words, how many times NCUA says safe and sound or safety and soundness, and compare that to how many times they say consumer compliance. And if I did it to this document, I don't have the data in front of me, but I will tell you that the use of the word safety and soundness, their primary responsibility, is lessening compared to the amount of times they say the word consumer compliance. And is it at the right balance? I don't know, but that word count shift shows the shift in focus a little bit. And of course, Chairman Harper will tell you that consumer compliance is safety and soundness, and I've disagreed with him here on the podcast, and I won't go any further into that. But I love the word search because it tells you what their focus is, right? And cyber is always a focus. So I mentioned AI, artificial intelligence, emerging technologies. Any thoughts? NCUA has been progressive in that arena from the blockchain letter where they made it clear that they didn't want to, what's the word I want to use, that they wanted to have an open mind to credit unions playing in the fintech arena. And all three board members at the time, this is when Rodney Hood was there, were comfortable with being a little bit more progressive in that arena than what was coming out from the FFIEC, which is a good thing. But any thoughts on that and or emerging technology? AI is the buzzword. Every stock-owned company out there has to talk about how they got AI because they think their stock's going to go up just because they said it. But what are your takeaways relative to the annual report, AI, and emerging technologies?
Personally, I'm still working on acquiring the eye. I'm trying to get as much of the eye as I can and try to retain it at my age. But anyway, this is important. It's also somewhat dangerous. Here is where you've got to weigh your business opportunity with your risk. And you're doing it into an uncertain environment. The example I use is we've gone so fast on this front that a couple of years ago, remember how everyone was telling me that voice was really the state of the art way to validate an account and to be sure that a person who was who they said they were on a telephone call and therefore can get access to their account, et cetera. Fast forward 2 years, and then you realize that the ability to do a deep fake on a voice is very pronounced, and people were breaking through a lot of those safeguards that we thought were state of the art. So here, it's you have to be in this game and you have to be tinkering, but you have to do it responsibly because you can't threaten the franchise. So you really have to understand what you're dealing with and what's coming down the pike as you use these emerging technologies. And you have to be trying continually tinkering and playing in this field to up to speed and be best in class. But at the same time, you got to make sure that you don't threaten the franchise. And so what the agency's done here, it reminds me of what they did in derivatives. They're opening it up. They're saying we're going to allow you to tinker, but they're also telling you don't screw it up. And it's almost what you have to do in this type of field where it's wide open. I will say we see plenty of, maybe it's the sexiest stuff, but it tends to get plenty of the press. We see plenty of investments by credit unions into fintechs. We see lots of credit unions doing progressive things in fintech, whether it's on payments or it's on validation. They are tinkering into blockchain. We've done some of that. We're familiar with some of it here. Some of it's talk more than it's adoption, but we'll see. This is something that takes time. It has to marinate. You don't make a sauce very quickly. It takes time and you've got to let it simmer. So the jury's still out.
All great points. You talk about AI and being able to imitate somebody's voice. I actually did a podcast based on the software I use for my podcast. It has two different artificial intelligence modules, an older one and a newer one, which is much better. But I took the older one and did a podcast that was like 3 minutes long, and it was all fake. It was all them generating my voice. And I sounded even more monotone than I normally do. And that was the giveaway. If someone knows me, they know it's not me, but it sounds like me. And then you look at the newer generation version of it, and it's better. And that was over like an 18-month period. And then earlier this year, I started a second podcast called Credit Union Regulatory Guidance. And that is AI. where I take a letter to credit unions, or I just did next week, I've got Terry Hunt's letter to NCUA saying, don't disclose overdraft fees. And I took that letter and I turned it into AI. And I had 15 female voices to choose from, 15 male voices. My wife and I listened to all of them and came up with someone who was called Samantha. And I named her Samantha Shares because of the share draft. But anyway, she's far more eloquent than me. She says the one kink in the armor is she says supervisory. So she says that like yes. She's from Australia or England. And I haven't been able to figure that out. And sometimes she says NCUA right and NCUA. And so I change that to agency on occasion, or we change that when we're editing. But just the fascination that we can take a 20-page letter and get it into a voice that sounds almost natural. And we're a couple years into doing this. What's it going to be 2 years from now, 4 years from now, let alone the Peter Gabriel guys that'll be out there making songs like they're Peter Gabriel and writing songs like Peter Gabriel and all of that.
I don't know if it's giving away too much, but I have listened to Samantha Shares while I've driven across the Midwest. I guess I was scraping the bottom of the, I had been through all of the with flying colors.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, you get up in the morning and you look at what's new in the list today. Yeah, I subscribe to this one, but I don't think I'm going to. 3 months later, you decide to get rid of that one. But it's an audio book for it. It's not as popular as With Flying Colors, but it is out there. But the technology that my wife and I could sit down and figure out how to do it so easily, and it sound relatively good, right? And it's crazy where that whole arena is going to go. I don't pretend to understand where AI is going to take us, but it, like you said, it's like the derivative comparison was very good on how NCUA that you made, that derivatives, and they want you to play in this sandbox. They want you to be careful. But if you don't have the opportunity to get into it, you could become irrelevant real quick.
But here's the thing, you have to play. And I say this to people in derivatives, in derivatives, there are 1,000 things you can do before you even get to the water's edge. So, and they're all prescribed in those regs, right? You have to educate your management, your board, your staff. You have to have multiple people with multiple responsibilities so that you've got silos, but you've got cross eyes across multiple pieces so that not one person can get your organization in too much trouble. But you've also then got to stand up counterparties and counterparty documents. You've got to understand the products that you would trade. Now, all of that can be done and should be done because it's part of the learning. And that is just the price of admission that gets you to the water's edge where you can then trade. And the folks who just don't get started on that path because they're scared of it or it's not a priority, right? When it comes time to trade, or when it comes time to put a hedge on to do something that's responsible, their path to affecting that transaction is so much longer than if they had done the work in the beginning and gotten themselves educated. And we say all the time, you've got to be engaged in the process of learning and standing up the undergirding of all of those foundational pieces that are important. Otherwise, you're not doing what you're supposed to do. And then when it comes time to do the work, you're too late. You get too long of a runway before you can affect something. And we see it in sub-debt where people take a look at it and then they come back to us and say, how quickly can I get this done? And I say, well, I could have made that quickly a month. Now that quickly is 6 months.
Great point on that. Derivatives, testing your relationship with the Federal Home Loan Bank and the Fed. When you need to move quick, you need to understand how the world works before all of a sudden you have that need in all of those arenas that you mentioned.
Broker deposits, any of your liquidity valves. We tell people all the time, have many, many sources, because I don't know which price is going to be in favor and I don't know who's going to have that supply that you need it. But test those pipes. Put your test trade down. You know, it's not going to make or break your institution, but you need to be able to understand that you can flow through any of those networks that you need to when you need.
Yeah, great point. Mike, is there anything? We've hit a lot of the highlights. Is there anything that I should have brought up relative to the annual report or any questions I should have asked you, and or any last thoughts that you have before we wrap up here?
I think you've got it all, Mark. You're just a tremendous questioner at this point. You're so savvy, having done so many of these podcasts. you're spot on. But I think we've gotten all the points. I do think we're in for a little bit of a tough environment here. As I said, I think credit unions shouldn't hide from that. The most successful credit unions are going to move into that and just make good decisions on behalf of their members. And I would say Holden Lane can be a part of assisting in any way. We're happy to do that. We have a very talented team here. They're great people. This is what we do. We enjoy it. It's a great industry to be in. So if we can be helpful in any way, we're here to help every credit union we can, large or small.
Yep, Mike, you do have a great team. This is a lot of fun today. And if someone's listened to this and they're going, hey, I want to talk to Mike and or the team at Holden Lane, what's the best way for them to reach you?
We're pretty prevalent on LinkedIn. You can find us there. I'm certainly there. We have a website. It's www.oldenlane.com. And you can get us there. We've got an info box. If you fill that out, it will come to all the four principals over here and a couple other folks. And we're happy to assist in any way we can, as I said. And Mark, again, thanks for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun, Mike. As always, I want to thank you for your time today. And listeners, I want to thank you for listening. This is Mark Treichel signing off with Flying Colors.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of With Flying Colors. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app to hear future episodes where subject matter experts of all varieties will provide tips on how to achieve success with NCUA. If you would like to learn more about how we assist credit unions, check out our services at marktreichel.com.